I'd like for you this morning to take your Bibles, if you will, turn to 2 Samuel chapter 21, 2 Samuel 21. I'm going to read from verse 15 down through verse 17. That's verse 15 through 17. And by the way, these are not my glasses. I'm just borrowing them from Charmin. I'm not this mod. Anyway, 2 Samuel 21, 15 through 17. When the Philistines were at war with Israel, David and his servants went down and fought against the Philistines. And David grew faint. Then Ishbenob, who was one of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose bronze spear was 300 shekels, who was bearing a new sword, thought he could kill David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and struck the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David swore to him, saying, "You shall go out no more with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel." This lesson centers around an obscure battle between David and a giant by the name of Ishbenob. And I want to notice this morning with you, if I can, some of the lessons that we can learn from a giant slayer. Now, of course, we know that David was already noted as a giant slayer and had already proven himself, but when it came to this particular giant, he wasn't. And what we learn from this, and right off the bat, is that Satan is not impressed with our reputation. Whatever we may have done in the past makes no difference. We remember the account of David's encounter with Goliath in 1 Samuel chapter 17. Notice at verse 43, the Philistine said to David, Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcass of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know there is a God in Israel." David had earned a mighty reputation as a warrior, and one that was well known. But the Holy Spirit warns us in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 12, "Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." A person is not able to rely upon past accomplishments to get him through present troubles. Notice, if you will, the account of Job in Job chapter 1, beginning with verse 8. The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil." So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him and around his household and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now, stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face." Well, the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord, and we know what happened then. But even though God had kept, in the past now, had kept Job from harm, what did he do? He allowed Satan to test him. But, you know, I was just thinking about this. Even Jesus was tempted by Satan. Notice in Luke chapter 4, the first two verses, Jesus, being filled with the Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, being tempted for 40 days by the devil. Even Jesus wasn't exempt from this. But we have to accept the fact that for all of us, no matter how strong we consider ourselves to be, there is a degree of vulnerability in our strength. In Numbers chapter 12, beginning at verse 3, I want to look at verse 3 first and then go down to chapter 20, verses 10 and 11. But Numbers 12:3. Now the man Moses, this description of Moses is very, very good. He was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. What a high commendation. But look at Numbers 20 with me, if you will, beginning of verse 10. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly. Now, notice he struck the rock with his rod. Peter failed to recognize that things like this happen. Moses was an example. He was an example. And unfortunately, he set a bad example. He failed to give God the glory for it. Consequently, it cost him the entrance into the promised land. If you look with me at Matthew chapter 26, verse 35, and well, I want to go down through 35, 51, 69, 70. But Peter said to the Lord, now listen to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And so said all the disciples. Now, we don't often think about all the disciples saying that. Just Peter. But look what happened to Peter, though, in verse 51. Suddenly, one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Who was that? Well, that was Peter. And then look at verse 69. Peter sat. I'm sorry. There we are. Peter sat outside in the courtyard, and the Lord was being the mock trial of the Lord. And a servant girl came to him and said, you were with Jesus of Galilee. Uh-oh. But look, here's the man who would die for Jesus. What did he do? He denied it before them all, saying, I do not know what you are saying. no matter how strong we think we are, we can be weak. We also see that Satan doesn't give up after just one defeat. There are times when we will see Satan utterly defeated. And that's a wonderful thing. Utterly defeating Satan. But he'll come back. He'll come back. In the second book of Samuel, chapter 16, beginning with verse 5, notice here, when King David came to Bahurim, there was a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera, coming from there. And he came out, cursing continuously as he came. And he threw stones at David and all the servants of King David, and all the people, the mighty men were on his right hand and his left. Also, Shimei said that this when he cursed, "Come out! Come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue! The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you are caught in your own evil, because you are a bloodthirsty man." Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse the Lord my king? Please let me go over and take off his head." But the king said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? Let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, 'Curse David.' Who then shall say, 'Why have you done so?'" And David said to Abishai and all his servants, "See how my son, who came from my own body, seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has ordered him." In other words, David knew what he was saying about him was right. But now, look on down into Samuel, our 2 Samuel 19. And we're going to read verses 18 through 23. "Then a ferry boat went over to carry the king's household and to do what he thought good. Now Shimei, the son of Gera," we were just talking about him now, "fell down before the king when he crossed the Jordan. Then he said to the king, 'Do not, my lord, impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king.' But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, 'Shall not Shimei be put to death for this? Because he cursed the Lord's anointed.' But David said, 'What have I to do with you, sons of Zeruiah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? Do I not know that today I am king over Israel?' Therefore the king said to Shimei, 'You shall not die.' And the king swore to him." Now, notice, he says, "You shall not die." But we run into this character again when David was on his deathbed and he was giving instructions to Solomon. Now let's read these carefully. "And see, You have with you Shammai, the son of Gera, a Benjamite for Baharum, who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day when I went to Mannheim. But he came down to meet me at the Jordan and swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now, therefore, do not hold him guiltless. You are a wise man and know what you ought to do to him. But bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood. Ultimately, what David is saying is he would pay the price for what amounted to treason. That's what he says. But, you know, if we think this thing out, we all have giants to kill throughout our lives. All of us. Paul, writing to the Ephesian brethren in the 6th chapter and verse 11, tells them to put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. What was he telling them? You're going to have some giants to slay in your life. And you better have the armor in place to do it with. You better have the armor in place. Remember now that the devil tempted Jesus 3 times in the wilderness. In Luke 4. 3 times. It's important to remember that we all need help at times. We saw this in our reading from 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 17, said that Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, come to his aid and struck the Philistine and killed him. David needed help. He needed help. And they did it for him. They killed him. In 2 Samuel 21, verses 15 and 16, notice with me here, when the Philistines were at war with David, when the Philistines were at war again with Israel, David and his servants went down and fought against them, but David grew faint. Now I want you to think about this. He grew faint. Then one of the sons of the giant, now it's thought that the giant they're referring to here, although he's not named, may well be Goliath. It may well be Goliath. But regardless, he was the one that Ishbi-Benob, he was of the race of the giants, or the Anakims who lived in Gath. But David was worn out. You suppose David might have been feeling the effects of age? And he wasn't that strong warrior he used to be. And he became the target of this giant. So, hey, that old man, he can't do anything. Just really go down there and kill him. Just go down there and kill him. But that's when Abishai came to the rescue. But actually, none of us are ever sufficient unto ourselves. Do you suppose, and this is just thinking here, based on what scriptures teach, do you suppose that this is one of the reasons why God ordained that we meet regularly for public worship? I mean, look what he sets forth for us in Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. Let us consider one another. Now notice that this is a one another action. In order to stir up love and good works. Do you notice how this is inseparably connected with not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together? We should consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. When we come together, that's one of our purposes. Stirring up love and good works. Not forsaking the assembling. And notice, it's not forsaking the assembly. That's not what it says. It's forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. Now, over in the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul, in giving instructions concerning the Lord's Supper, calls the assembling together the church. That's what he calls it. But over here, he simply says the assembling of ourselves together. For what purpose? To stir up love and good works. That's what purpose. But he says, some of you have a habit of doing this. Leaving down and out, forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. But instead of this, instead of forsaking, we need to be exhorting one another. And there again, a one another activity. And so much the more as you see the day approaching. That has to do with us. And we need that together. You know, I often think of the illustration of a fellow who was visiting with a member who had stopped attending or didn't attend regularly. And he was sitting outside his backyard by a campfire. And he said, would you want to join me out here, preacher? Come on. Come on, sit down. So the preacher got out there and they began talking. And the preacher took a stick and pushed one of the coals that was in the fire out away from the fire. And he said, hey, what are you doing that for? He said, because what happens to that coal? It's what's happening to you. You get out here outside the fire, you give that a little time, and that coal is going to turn cold. And that's what's happening to you. That's why we need one another. The more we get together, the more we consider one another to stir up love and good works. And the more we exhort one another. As Paul said in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. David was fortunate to have a friend there to help him when he needed help. But that's what we are here for, to bear one another's burdens. You know, in the course of life, our roles of service to God sometimes change. As we said before, David was no longer the great warrior that he once was. But notice, his people recognized that he still had great value to Israel, and that they needed to make sure that they kept him. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, I want you to look here, begin at verse 14, Paul uses the body here to reflect the church and how it works. One part helps the other and so forth. But I want you to look at this with me now carefully. He says in verse 14, in fact, the body is not one member, but many. Well, I mean, we all understand that. But if the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I'm not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as He pleased. We all play a part in the body. Not all of us are song leaders. Not all of us are preachers or Bible class teachers. But we still play a part in the body. And we're important, just like David was. As I said before, we all have our giants to kill. All of us. Nobody's exempt. Now, hopefully, the first thing we'll do is enlist in the army. And that, of course, is assuming that we have not obeyed the gospel yet. We haven't enlisted. But once we enlist in the army, we need to put on our armor. Because giants are everywhere. And then, now this is a good part, join in the victory. Because we have God. And ultimately, God wins. Somebody asked someone here a while back. Now, sum up the book of Revelation, just a few words. Oh, yeah. He kind of got a grin and said, okay, God wins. That's it. That's what that it's all about. God wins. And that is the truth. Ultimately, God will be victorious. And these giants don't stand a chance.